today on Vox Talks, the threat to financial stability from COVID-19. Welcome to another of the Centre for Economic Policy Research's Vox Talk podcast on the fast-moving impact of COVID-19. My name is Tim Phillips. I've been speaking to Enrico Perotti of the University of Amsterdam about the shock to financial stability in the euro area, where that shock may manifest, and what policymakers should be doing about it. I began by asking him whether the dash for cash that we have seen from citizens and investors is a threat to the stability of Europe's banks.
Well, you know, banks are in the business of providing liquidity. And people are, of course, concerned that as individuals and firms spend with little income, the banks would be depleted. That's actually in the short term very much not an issue, because in the end, most of the money that is withdrawn by banks, by savers, is paid back into someone else's account. So as long as confidence stands in the banks can reallocate resources. Now, this is a short-term response. Now, the issue with larger banks is more complicated, because banks have relied maybe a bit too much to the generous liquidity that we've had in this long period of time. They forgot some of what was going on in their normal times and is doomed to come back. Essentially, they have extended a lot of credit line to firms, which of course is a very good thing, but we don't know exactly how large would be the outflows to those firms. So that requires, will require more reallocation within the system. And there's going to be also a lot more margin calls. So for large banks that have really built a significant derivative position, there will be potentially huge liquidity drawing. So that is something, thankfully, the banks have to be thankful, Basel III for. They are much better prepared, and in principle, you know, they ought to be able to use the buffers they created.
Now, outside the protection of Basel III, I think you're more alarmed about the impact on shadow banking in the euro area, specifically the parts of the shadow banking that expanded during QE. Can you describe what happened then?
Right. Well, so first of all, there are issues for banks that are not in the short to medium term. But I think that they are so related to the future of the whole general economy that the issue becomes more fiscal, and so indirectly. On the shadow banks, so what happened during this, particularly in Europe, but throughout the world, also in Japan, UK, and the Fed, QE boosted the balance sheet of central banks that supply a lot of liquidity, but essentially withdrawing largely safe assets. So in Europe, the issue probably went too far for exquisitely political reason. The ECB bought way too many safe assets at the core. And that was one of the fact was that it had a massive compression of yields at the core, with no good effect in principle. One of the consequences was that there was a big push of savers looking for yield. This was even called by someone as the deliberate risk channel monetary policy. And that took a lot the form of people investing in shadow bank construction, specifically bond funds, although there are more other construction of that sort, and other things related, for instance, to mortgage carrying vehicles, but in Europe, particularly bond funds. And bond funds expanded recklessly. What I particularly want to stress here is that bond funds are shadow banks in the sense that they really try to mimic what a bank does. They want to give the impression that you put your money in a fairly safe thing and that you can withdraw on demand. And indeed, it is the case that bond funds allow you to redeem, at least on a good day. In fact, most of the time, shadow banks can rely on market liquidity to provide liquidity to investors, even though essentially they are very lightly regulated and they don't have any liquidity backstop or fiscal backstop the way banks do. So in good time, the shadow banks expands as it did during the previous credit boom, and it did in this case. But he expanded very much on this idea of a promise of safety and liquidity they couldn't really deliver. I mean, Mr. Carney from the Bank of England raised the alarm already last year because he kept saying that it was highly fictional what was being proposed. You couldn't offer so much liquidity when the underlying assets were not liquid at all. And I must say, you know, the European regulator were pretty dismissive of that, and that is a missed chance. We do have some procedure, thank God, now in place in case redemption become very vast, in the sense that there will be some stoppage and gates and possibly fee. But truly, I think the damage is done. We should never allow this to grow to this extent. The world there of these sort of funds is I'm focusing in particular on bond funds because, you know, it's only natural that people invest in mutual funds should be exposed to price fluctuation. But bond funds were really sort of telling a story that these were fairly safe assets, safe construction, because bonds have a certain historical connotation of having relatively solid underlying support. And things have changed quite a bit in that sense.
I mean, even before Mark Carney made his intervention, if you look back at what you've written on BoxEU, for example, you've been calling for regulators to take a closer look at the growth of shadow banking in Europe for many years now. Is what's happening now the sort of event that you feared could happen?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, what the concern, the problem with shadow banking is always that, you know, you can expand very fast and you can contract very fast. And it feeds off market liquidity. And when market liquidity is abundant, you know, you look like a genius there. And when it contracts, it's someone else's problem. I think the problem was that in a sense, what was allowed to, the problem is not so much that investors in mutual funds are exposed to risk, but that you draw into this class of, investments, individuals that actually are looking for safe haven. The problem with this type of investors is that they don't have a big appetite for risk. The moment they start to see that there is a problem, they'll pull money out. And these days, there is already money coming out of the savings vehicles because people need to spend without having all the income. So these are natural outflows. But once you start to realize that the assets that these funds have accumulated are hardly as liquid as was promised, then the risk is the share price of these funds drop fast as they have. They'll even fall below net asset value. At that point, you will have, well, we already have basically hell breaking loose because people will panic. These are not people that are going, they have necessarily the appetite to wait for a rebound.
I was going to ask you, as we speak, what is this, Wednesday morning, 25th of March, what is happening to bond funds at the moment? Are investors panicking? Is it possible to get a run on the shadow banks?
Oh, yeah, no, any bank can be run. And a properly defined shadow bank can be run. There are many things that are called shadow banks, which is a stretch of the term, like insurance or hedge funds. Those can be run, but it's in a very different and slower and in a sort of proportional way. Shadow banks can be absolutely run. I mean, these funds allow for immediate redemption. There are massive redemption going on. The numbers I haven't seen, except for a few graphs, which I'm also having in my BoxEU piece that is coming up now. So you have an impression. But some of the numbers are impressive, the one you get from the US. So what you have is a very rapid drop in what is the listed value or share of mutual fund shares. And the fall below a net asset value. This is sheer liquidity shock because, you know, who's, you know, the bonds, some people may think the bonds are worth more, but no one is buying them. So then this is a classic liquidity mismatch is coming to bite the sponsors. And essentially promise way too much liquidity and they could really deliver. It's not a job of central bank to backstop shadow banks that were not regulated by them. So I think we do not, I do not see the numbers in the general press. I'm sure that people, however, on trading desk could tell you a lot more about it. The numbers in the US suggest that, you know, bond share prices drop very fast below net asset value and outflows are continuing.
Now, a point you also make in what you've written for us at FoxEU is that the shadow banks have invested in collateralized loan obligations, CLOs. For people who haven't thought about this very much before, can you explain what they are, what this market is, why it's grown so fast?
Yes. So what has happened, you have to put in the bigger perspective why this shock may be heavy on this segment. You have to understand the trends of the last year. So what has happened is that more legitimate, high-quality borrowers have largely reduced their demand for credit. In general, the corporate sector has been operating on lower and lower level leverage, much as you wouldn't think so. But these are the facts from the flow of funds. What has happened is that as sort of most firms require less financing, in part because they invest less in tangible assets, banks have been left with, you know, lending capacity, and they've been way too eager to go into agreement to fund a highly leveraged transaction, a lot through private equity or other investors that essentially tend to lever up companies, sometimes to support egregious payouts and for restructuring. And what happened is that these syndicated loans are then collateralized and sold. Banks have been retaining some of it, perhaps more than we know. I mean, I hope this is not going to be a repeat of what happened with their securitization cycle last time. But they've certainly sold a lot to bond fund, in part because bond funds were rising. And so they had demand for it. And so when people want bonds, then the private sector will manufacture bonds. And unfortunately, these are unsecured bonds. There is some pretty ridiculous stories out there how the CLOs are better than mortgage-backed security because those supposedly were backed by bad mortgages. Well, I mean, of course, there was a share of that. The truth is that at least the mortgage-backed security had a house as collateral. These CLOs are unsecured bonds, unsecured loans, and therefore they rely on cash flow. That's the base of payment. In addition, as my piece on VoxEU will highlight, banks have been issuing, being accepting weaker and weaker covenants to protect the unsecured. The net result is that I think that in a sharp recession, such as what we're experiencing, and one that deprives company of cash flow, we're going to have definitely the kind of almost worst correction you could expect. You'll be quick, hopefully you'll be short, the solvency issue might be not as extreme, but you know, any loss given default on these bonds are going to be very different from what people portray bond risk to be historically. So that has I think the issue of these funds is truly not just that bonds are liquid, but the fundamentals are weak in a sharp recession.
And worst case, what's the threat to stability here? What could happen?
Well, I mean, I think that shadow banks ought to be able to deflate and take losses because, I mean, this is not, should not be the job of a central bank to back this sort of market instrument. I would be very concerned if that were the case. I mean, the Fed has already, decide to launch a program supporting bonds prices for sort of better companies. Not commenting on that. I mean, but the issue here is that even the Fed, I don't think, is going to necessarily go into these kind of bonds, and in fact, it shouldn't. I have no idea what the ECB should do. I am very clear, however, that whatever fiscal monetary firepower we have in Europe should be directed at supporting more diffusely the population at a time where the shock hits everybody in a very granular way, rather than trying to, you know, bail out errors in the shadow banking context. So I think it's basically a hit on wealth. It will have an effect, of course. You know, there is a strange episode. In a sense, these sort of bond funds were equity funds without knowing it, and actually with less upside. There is an analogy perhaps with the internet bubble. When it burst, there was no real crisis. It was a massive loss of wealth, nominally, but you know, it was a deflation of portfolios. So as such, that particular component is going to make us poorer, wiser, but as long as it's not connected to the banking sector, it's not going to be the end of the world. I think, however, we have to reconsider the extent to which we allow highly leveraged transaction. And in that context, another policy question that is very important is the current EU bankruptcy reform that is being initiated by the directive that might end up further undermining the rights of unsecured creditors. And that is a cause of alarm. I think right now, you know, shareholders and secure creditors simply have too much power, and you know, the public is left out, you know, sort of sitting ducks.
So if you were thinking of policy to be put in place right now to be able to do something to mitigate the immediate risks to stability that you've described, what would it be? Should we be doing anything?
I think we should do something somewhere else. I mean, I think that is absolutely urgency. I think we have to understand this for what it is and not overreact to something that truly is set up to run its course to some degree. I think that this is not the banking sector, it's the shadow banking sector. We should learn this lesson once and for all. But then we need perhaps to have more significant supervision of this segment. I mean, the FSB is the only entity that has attention and some mandate for that, although no real powers. And central bank have been not particularly attentive to this issue because it's, after all, it doesn't affect the bank. Although the banks have been large originators and they might be retaining more CLOs than we are aware. So I think more attention should really be put in this. And I think we will lull in a sense of false security by abundant market liquidity driven by the purchases. The worst thing is, however, that we were also, you know, just the ECB ended up being too busy buying bonds that it didn't need to buy. There's hardly any need to ECB buying bonds since everybody wants them already. And I think there are unintended consequences from concentrating on extremely safe assets on such a scale.
Mm-hmm. So the message is don't overreact at the moment, but there are some lessons to be learned in the longer term about this.
That would be my general line. The issue is to focus on the impact on banks, and but there is no. I think that would be the policy. I think the real question in Europe are about issues on the fiscal front, fiscal solidarity and rebalancing, and targeting better also the ammunition of the ECB. It's counterproductive to just follow blindly a capital key norm. You have to see where the need is, essentially. And we probably need also to take steps towards creating a safe European safe asset in euro, which ought to be some kind of compilation of our sovereign bonds. But that has been said by many academics before. It just takes some courage.
Enrico, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And stay well.
Clearly, this story, like many to do with COVID-19, is developing all the time. So keep in touch with all our coverage at Vox EU. We're adding something new to it every day. If you want to find out about Enrico's analysis in more depth, his article is called The Coronavirus Shock to Financial Stability. If you want to keep up with Vox Talk's coverage of COVID-19, subscribe on your podcast platform and you'll never miss an episode. But you'll also find all our back episodes at voxeu.org/vox-talks.